Hi, welcome to the podcast that explores what virtual assistants want business owners to know when they start asking themselves the question, hey, do I need a VA? I'm Rachel Davila, and after 18 years as a virtual assistant going it alone, I experienced the steep learning curve from the other side of the VA client relationship when I hired my own assistant. Joining me on this podcast is a group of friends and colleagues who all have their own take on what busy entrepreneurs need to know to find, hire, and work with a virtual assistant and mindfully answer the question, hey, do I need a VA? Let's get this episode started. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Hey, Do I Need a VA? The podcast. We're in season two, and today is episode 7. And the topic is, let's get technical. Over the last season and a half, we've mentioned technical things to consider, but today it's all about your technical questions and the things that we want you to know when it comes to technology. And I promised Leanne I would not direct everything to her, even though she is our techie VA, but Bree also knows a ton of technical things. She already schooled me on a couple of things that I hope she repeats in this episode. So, first thing to say is you don't have to know it all. There is a vast array of technology, programs, software, all kinds of different things that you could literally get lost in the void of trying to figure it all out and what makes sense for you. So this was something that I was told and I share it a lot. Start where you are. Start with what you need in the moment as you need it, and you can build into where you want to go. If a program works for you, your VA can probably step in and learn it or has experience in a program that's similar to it. So if you are using specific programs, your VA may not need to know that specific program because they probably know something very similar or can pick it up quickly. The other thing that I thought was a big problem, but Bree assured me is not, is Mac versus PC. Back when I started, there wasn't a lot of cross-platform programs, but over the last two decades, we've gotten collaborative spaces. A lot of things are web-based, and so the disconnect between a Mac and a PC isn't as vast as I thought it was. But are there still things that we need to consider with the Mac versus PC? I'm going to turn it over to my technical advisors, Bree and Leanne, for this one.
You want to start, Bree?
Sure. I mean, it's like anything, right? It depends on what experience you have. And at one point in time, I had a Mac and a PC so that I could make sure I could handle both of the things. But over the last few years, I found that I've been able to let go of one for my preference of the other and still be able to work with clients who say use Pages or things like that, that are a little bit different. There's workarounds. It doesn't directly, like if they send me Pages, I can't open it. But what I can do is go online and go find a conversion site, upload Pages, get it converted into something I work in, and then download it, work it. And I can do the same thing to flip it and send it back to them if that's their preference.
Thank you for resharing that because that was new to me, y'all. So, I mean, even if you have years of experience in the field, you can still learn something new every day. So thank you, Bree. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And like you said, there's so many different collaborative spaces and things like that, that I find it's not as much of a thing that with the Mac versus PC, because there's so much online systems that you can use that would work no matter which platform it is. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of those platforms are trying to be that way so that it's not cutting out half their market. Right? So that if people are a PC, they're not cutting out the Mac people. They don't want to exclude people either. So it's been more efforts put in to make sure that things are good on both sides that way as well, I found.
Okay.
How about you, Leanne?
Yeah, I've noticed that it doesn't seem to matter as much. I do remember, Rachel, a while ago, it was, oh my goodness, this client's on Mac. Now what do I do? But even recently, and I didn't know this because I don't work on a Mac on a regular basis, that the Mac users can now export out in something that a PC user can see. So there, you don't even have to go out to an outside conversion. They can actually just save it into something that you can use. And then I can give it back to them and they can bring it back into their stuff. And now that's all within the Mac world. It doesn't need to be an outside program, which is nice because, yeah, it used to be either you had to or you went new to convert. But now Mac is allowing whoever has the Mac to export out for PC. I haven't found anything in PC that exports out to Mac, though. The only other thing I've noticed is when working on websites, you do still need some kind of device that is a Mac-based or an IO-based because things look different on certain things. Yeah, so I have my iPad and I use my husband's iPhone and that kind of stuff to make sure it all looks the same or looks good, because what looks good on one screen does not always look good on other screens.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have an iPad. For a while, I had like an iPad and a mini, and then I had a this and a that, right? Just to test. Or I'll send it to specific team members too that I have to be that are on Mac and have them test things that way too.
And there was my husband going, do you need your iPhone right now? Because I need it. It's like, I'm kind of using it, but okay.
Just go to this site really quickly and tell me how it looks.
I text him a lot of sites telling him, give me some screenshots.
All right. So one of the things that I noticed as we were kind of dropping things in other episodes is a client may not necessarily know what we're talking about when we say a CRM or a collaborative workspace. So I wanted to kind of, in this episode, define what some of those terms are and any that I may not be aware of, but that you guys have come across. And we'll start with CRMs. Client record management. Is that what that is?
Yep. That's it. That's the official definition. Good job, Rachel.
I don't actually work in them, or at least I didn't think I did. So for those of you that don't know, client record management, CRMs, are, you know, I'm going to let Brie define this one for me because I don't actually know the answer to this one.
Yeah, they're great for tracking like potential leads or clients that you've worked with that maybe like maybe you started them on an opt-in or you started them at a lower level offer and now you want to follow up with them on something that's a little more higher ticket or the next step in the process of what you do, especially if you're like you're a coach or a consultant or things like that. So it's a way to track the people that you've worked with or connected with and to be able to touch base with them, kind of foster that relationship and track, you know, if you sent them out a contract, have you heard back from them? Have things that you can set up as reminders to touch base or check in with them in 6 months and follow up and that kind of stuff. So that you don't have to have a million calendar reminders and things aren't falling off your awareness. Nice. Is there anything you would add, Leanne?
So one of the things I've noticed is CRM does get a lot of weird terms. And yes, Brie, you are exactly what I always thought a CRM is. But the more I work with clients, they're using it as a term for almost like the mailer. So almost like MailChimp and Constant Contact. They're using those terms or using CRM as, can you use a CRM like MailChimp? And I'm like, I didn't really consider MailChimp a CRM, but okay. Yeah, I guess technically it is. I mean, you are managing your emails and or the, you know, the email addresses and last time you talked to them, how many times they're clicking. So it is, but it's not as detailed. So there are like different levels of what you need and they all kind of fall under this category called CRM. So like HubSpot is awesome. They have a free version that does a lot, but it doesn't have everything. And if you go up to, I need to be able to follow up and send all these things and put comments in, then you're moving up into their paid accounts. But their free account lets you manage an awful lot without all those pieces. So if you're a client that doesn't need to follow up on, you know, hey, I've got this client and I sent out this contract and now they signed it and now I have to get my Salesforce and all. It, once you get more people involved, you need more management. But a lot of it can be done if you have a smaller group in something as simple as MailChimp or HubSpot, the free version. There's a lot of stuff out there that falls under that category now, which is why people get confused.
Mm-hmm. I think some of it too depends on the volume, right? Like I personally use ClickUp as my CRM. but I don't have high volume of people that I'm trying to touch base with. And we have our process in there and I work with my team on it in there. But there are also ones that people are also using now as like building a referral network. So if you're using your CRM as a directory, then there might be things you want to consider before you build it or as you're building it. Do you want to take people in a certain way so that if somebody comes to you and they want to ask, do you know a really good contractor? And you happen to connect with a few of them while you're networking. Well, now I can go search my CRM and pull up that tag and be like, yeah, here are those people. So if we're trying to like do it as a referral way, you might work in it a different way than when you do with your clients or when you do with your email stuff. So considering things like that and what you actually want your purpose for are good things when you're considering how you want it to look and what platform might fit for you. But knowing you don't have to be married to it, you can always export your list and go somewhere else if you need to.
Yep. It's your information and they have to give it to you.
Yeah. You guys said don't get fixated, right? Like getting fixated kind of means like, oh, I have to use this particular program because it does X, Y, and Z, or that one because it does A, B, and C. Do you need both? Like, I guess, how would somebody go about making those determinations for CRM?
So one of the things I ask my clients is how much do they want to work in it? And then after that question, if it's, I want to be in it, working in it, I don't want to turn it over to a VA, is how tech savvy are you? Because there are some awesome CRMs out there, but you almost have to have a degree in that CRM to run it. But then there are some really simple ones. So I always ask them, what level of tech do they want to work with? If they just want to go in and type it almost like I'm typing on a Word document, okay, we need to go with some of the easier programs. If they're really into their charts and clicking and all tags and all these other things, awesome. We can go with a whole bunch of other programs. It just kind of depends on what they want to do. So that is the number one is, you know, are they going to turn this over to somebody or are they going to do it? And then what level do they want?
Yeah. Having that clarity makes a huge difference. And pondering like how deep you want to go into the rabbit hole, or if you just want to start with something, try it on. It can be like trying on shoes. Maybe you try on one and you start at this level and then you realize after a while, no, I want a different level. Then you can, like I said, either find something else and export it, or you can work within that system. But I would also consider, like Leanne and I were talking about this just yesterday, that what other kinds of things are you doing? There might be a version or a level of a CRM and other platforms that you're already using that would fulfill those needs without having to have an extra program that you need to go into. Maybe there is something, maybe MailChimp level is enough. Maybe there's something in your Kajabi account. If you're doing Go High Level, are you using it for that, or HoneyBook, or all these other different platforms, right? If you're using these platforms already, maybe there's a level of that and you don't have to have yet another thing.
That's a good idea. Sid, do you have much experience with CRMs?
I honestly didn't know what a CRM was before this recording. But I think after hearing you guys talk about it, I have used CRMs. Like I've used ClickUp. And so I think a lot of people probably use CRMs and know of CRMs, but don't necessarily call them CRMs. And like I've used MailChimp. I think it depends on what works for the virtual assistant and what works for the client, because I think another aspect of it would be like, how organized does the client want to be? Does the client want, you know, something that's super organized, super detailed, or is the client really just like whatever works and like hands it over to the VA? And I think it's really just a reflection of what the VA client relationship needs. Also what the client needs from the VA. If the client in general needs structure from the VA, then I think that would be reflected in not necessarily just the CRMs that are used, but in a lot of the technology that's used. But if the client doesn't necessarily need structure, is okay to, you know, to play around with things that are like either are more free-flowing or are more simple, then I think that would also reflect different technology.
Some other things to consider when you are thinking about a CRM. Are you going to use your VA to set something up, or do you have it and you want them to come into an existing setup. And I'm sure that pricing can be a consideration, how much you're going to use it, if it does the things that you want it to do, all those kinds of things. Any other things around CRMs? I know we could go really deep, but we're not going to. We're going to keep it kind of surface level. But if you're listening to this and you have a question about CRMs, you have two wonderful VAs that you can reach out to using the link in our show notes. Let's switch to collaborative spaces, only because AI is going to be a big one, and we're going to circle back around to that. But collaborative spaces, we've mentioned that before. We've kind of talked about the pros and the cons for that. What are collaborative spaces? What is the definition of a collaborative space?
Leanne, do you want to take this one?
Gee, thanks, Brie.
I did do it. She threw you.
I took the last one. So
I know you've been doing so good with the definitions. So in my opinion, and I did not look this up, so you know, feel free to correct it. In my opinion, collaborative spaces are a space, for the most part, in the clouds that you and your client can work, or a VA and a client can work on the same document at the same time, or pass it back and forth, depending on how you want to deal with that. There's collaborative spaces also tend to be web-based in some way, so they're not tied to a platform. So if your VA is on a PC and you're on a Mac, that's okay if you're using collaborative space. That being said, there are some exceptions. Anything you want to add to that, Brie?
No, that's exactly it. Like, it's mainly that it's web-based and that both of you can work on it in a way. There's lots of different pros and cons on it. I personally would find that the collaborative spaces are really great for working back and forth on things.
It alleviates the version control problem.
Yeah.
Or as I like to call it, clobbering somebody else's work.
So yeah. Some collaborative spaces that I know and use are Google Drive, Dropbox. I know within Canva, I can leave comments and things, so that feels like it's a collaborative space. And I'm sure there are other programs where you may be able to work within the same file or leave a comment. I mostly do Google Drive and the Google Drive versions of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, those kinds of things. Do you guys have others that people might not think are collaborative spaces?
Microsoft is trying to lean towards that nowadays and doing like shared drive, and you could do some things that are more web-based in there. So there are some that are trying to go towards that. Mm-hmm.
I think this is kind of a collaborative space. It's called Notion. Have you guys heard of it? But it's essentially, it's really cool. And it could be a CRM-ish if a person decided to use it like that. But it's really just like, it's a team workspace. So when I did my internship over the summer, it was entirely with Notion. And it makes it, it's just super easy to create different pages and to have all of those pages linked on another page. And so it's very intuitive too. And it's fun to design. But I think the biggest thing is that, like, you know, we're all working in the same kind of network. Instead of having Google Drive, where there's like a lot of different documents that, you know, a person could work on and see, Notion is like, I guess more like interconnected in a way. So it's like a document that's in a document. Yeah. So I think that would be the one that I know.
Nice.
Yeah. There's one similar to like Evernote or things mm-hmm. like that as well. And then also similar with like the task management thing is like ClickUp or Trello or Asana, Monday. Like there's a lot of different ones that you can explore that all have really great things about them where you can keep. One of my favorite things is you can keep your communication not in emails or texts and stuff like that, because they get lost, they get bogged, and you have a workspace that you can go into and have all your communication on tasks and things in one place.
Well, there's two different ones. Graphic creation mostly for me, that's like Canva. And for me, Canva, I can create and either download the images for clients or send them the file. Though I do have to warn clients, like, formatting can be a fun thing. As a client has recently learned, they went in to make changes and they wrote me back and they said, I screwed it all up. Can you fix it? And that's, well, that's the joy of a collaborative space. They could go in, screw it all up, and I could go back in and fix it.
I have a workaround on that.
Yeah.
I send them a template link so that I still have a copy. They get a copy, but if they tinker with it, I still have the original.
That's smart.
That is smart.
So I either make a copy or send them a template link so that when they populate it into their Canva, it's separate.
See, I learn all kinds of useful Canva things that I don't think about in these calls. It's awesome. Thank you so much.
I don't know if it's control freakness of me, but I like to like make sure, because I've had experiences where like a client went in and accidentally did something or whatever, and you can't always undo it. So I like to send copies and still have the original. And then once we get to a place, I delete that one, but we have like as a backup.
See, but the digital hoarder in me is like, but what if we need that one? I don't know if I would delete. It would just get really messy. Sydney's been in my Canva couch. They know how disorganized I can be. Which is funny because I'm an organizer.
But I think that's also the thing about collaborative spaces is that I think much like a CRM, the one you choose depends on how organized you want to be. The amount you can organize and be detailed in ClickUp is like exponentially higher than what you could do in Google Drive. And so it also kind of depends on like, well, does the client want something that's simple or do they need that structure? And so I think that organization piece is also important in choosing what collaborative workspace you want to go for.
Okay. I know now why I put graphic creation next to the AI, because Leanne has taught me that the AI, I don't think it's ChatGPT, but I think you said that it can. There's all these new AI creation things that will create graphics for you and writing and all kinds of stuff. And Leanne's newsletter has a whole section on AI for everyone. Clients are coming to me having used AI and how they're using it and everything. So it's not going away. I know we could totally go down a rabbit hole just on AI alone, which we're not going to do. But what are some things that potential clients should consider with AI? And please define it, Leanne, because... To me, you're the expert because I read your newsletter.
I get the feeling Bree's pretty close too.
I'm sure she is, but she doesn't have a newsletter with a heading on it.
So AI is artificial intelligence. And I have learned a new trick, which is as of this recording, this is how things stand. AI is moving so fast that it may be obsolete tomorrow. We don't know. Anyway, so I'm starting to consider putting something like that on my newsletter because it does move very, very fast. AI is a tool and you can do a lot of stuff with it. It is fun to create graphics with it because now I don't have to go try to find a graphic that works with what I want. I can tell it what I want and it'll create it in the style I want. With some errors usually, but you know, whatever. Okay, so for the most part, full disclosure, I am still using free versions of everything. I'm not paying for any of the AI tools. They do get better as you pay for them. There are too many out there for me to play with to pay for all of them. So I'm using free versions. My favorite way for Rachel to statement of making images, I actually use Copilot. I stopped trying to do it in ChatGPT because it was throwing me out to other things and I was having problems downloading it, although I think they fixed the download problem. But I went to Copilot to do it and it's doing a pretty good job, or I've learned it's trained me on how to tell it what it wants. Well, I'm not sure which way that goes. All my images that I'm using in my newsletter are coming from AI at this point. That being said, I've had clients going, oh, I don't need a VA because there's AI now. And it's like, no, 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 no. That's not, AI is not a replacement for VA. It's not. Maybe someday in the far future, but right now it's not. You have to know how to use the AI to get what you want. Graphic images are the fun way. I'm pretty sure almost everybody's using some version of AI to help them write things at this point. I know I do, at least to get something on the page, so I'm not looking at a blank page while I'm trying to write. That being said, as far as AI is concerned, I also tend to go a little more on the conservative side. So things like, I have not given AI my image to edit because I don't want my AI knowing my image. I mean, yes, it could go find it, but I'm not going to give it to it, because anything you give AI, unless you've checked all the boxes and made sure and you're using one of the ones that say they're not going to train, they're going to use what you give it to train future AI. I don't want them having my image. Don't ever give it anything like bank account numbers or anything really personal to you, because it's going to be out there and you do not want that out there. So much for the scary part. We won't go any deeper on that. Brie, what are you using AI for?
Yeah, we use quite a bit. Actually, you were the one who taught me and got me going on it when it first came out. So thank you for that. But we use, like, I have the paid version of ChatGPT and stuff. So there's DALL-E in there, and there's like, even Canva has, like, there's different plugins and stuff through ChatGPT that you can use and play around with. There's also AI stuff on the paid version of Canva, and you can go in and give it a prompt and things like that. With anything, the quality of the prompt that you give it is going to be the quality of, if you say, I want a cat in a tree, it's going to give you a cat in a tree. But if you want a cat looking at the camera, like, the details that you give it and the quality of the prompt that you give it will help you with the type of quality of image that you're going to get, especially for graphic creation. And there are Facebook groups and places that you can go to see what kind of prompts people are using to give you some inspiration and seeing the images that they get from that. It's not always as, I find it's easier in text to be like, okay, so you were almost on track with what I wanted, but can you regenerate it as this? It's a little more tangential when it comes to an image. I can say, I really like what you did here, and can you add this? And it goes on a completely different image. So it's not as easy. It's definitely not a replacement. It is a tool. So the quality of the prompts that you get, the quality of information that you give it, the amount of information to, like, if you're trying to get it to do a writing thing, if you give it sample documents and stuff like that, that helps with what it will give you back. There are definitely a lot of different options and things out there. It is growing, but it still needs a human touch. You have to read it over. You have to look it over. You can't just use a video editing AI tool and then throw it up there. Quite often I find it doesn't make sense. I'm like, it started halfway through a sentence. I don't feel like there was a point to that video. I think AI missed it and they just posted it, right? So you can tell on those kinds of things. You have to review it. You have to have a human factor in there.
I think that's kind of the underlying premise for all technology. There needs to be a human component for all of it.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't use AI a ton. Riverside actually has AI tools that will, you know, like, cut out the pauses of the recordings and, you know, cut out the ums and the likes and the stuff like that. And so I do play around with that a little bit. But there are points in the recording where I'll listen to it back and I'll be like, actually, that noise was, like, needed because somebody was exclaiming, you know, someone was making a human noise that our audience would need to hear to understand the point. There is, like, a line, right? Like, I don't think I would ever use AI to be like, just edit the video for me and then not listen to it and then, you know, post it. But I think using it to kind of to do that tedious work and then listening to it and being like, okay, cool, that's helped a lot. But, like, in terms of college, a lot of my professors have talked about AI because it's kind of come into popularity while I'm in college. And they're like, don't do it. They're like, don't turn in an AI essay, which is fair. I think that in terms of, like, use of AI in an academic space is very different from use of AI in a business space. And so I think a lot of professors are afraid, like, you know, if they use AI, then they're not going to learn how to think critically because they're just going to take the ideas that AI give them Where like when you're in a business, it's like, well, you don't, you're just trying to get ideas. Like it's not necessarily that you're in your business to learn how to think critically, right? Like when you're in college, you're paying so much money to learn how to think critically. But when you're in a business, it's like, it's very different. So I feel like the use of AI as a tool is like definitely makes a lot of sense because it can help you save time, especially when it comes to the things that you don't want to be doing. But yeah, a lot of programs have AI components. I know Adobe Illustrator also has started working in an AI component, which I haven't tried out yet, but maybe in the future.
I like to think of AI as like a thought partner, right? Like you're sharing ideas, you're getting feedback. And sometimes it's just even like you have an idea, but you have a blank page. And sometimes having a blank page is a really hard place to start. So even getting feedback from AI and being like, I want to write an article about email marketing. And I want it to be about like, what are kind of opt-ins you want to do? And it'll spit out something. And sometimes I'm like, that is not at all what I want to say. But even that is a starting place for me to understand what it is that I want to look at. And so it's nice to have that bounce back with somebody who's available all the time. And I don't have to worry about bothering them, or I need to do a little extra research. It helps trim down the Google search kind of thing and give me some stuff. And then I can go and do it on a deeper level on certain things. So having just kind of like thinking of it as more of like a thought partner and just kind of like getting a starting place and then putting my own personality into it or writing it myself or helping it with the flow. Like maybe sometimes I feel like when I write something, if I go back and look at it, maybe should have started with the end first or whatever else, like getting that flow kind of help, but using my words, that's like where I like to use it.
So I have learned that you still have to infuse with your voice, your patterns, right? Because I wrote a blog post. AI helped me write a blog post and my editor was like, this doesn't even sound like you. And I was like, oh God, now I got to go through it and really like, but I could see where if I had like a sample of my work, that was before I knew what to do in AI. All of these tools really do help you get to a starting place. If you're already working in something, don't start over, start where you are. But if you're like, I need to add something to what I'm doing, it's not working, I need more, then technology is a great place to start for that. We have wonderful experts who are willing to talk it through with you and answer any questions you have. So if any of these technical topics or any that we didn't cover, because technology is vast, if you have a specific question that you would like us to answer in a future episode, send us an email to heyvapodcast@gmail.com. Do you guys have anything else to add before we sign off?
I just have one quick thing that I'm going to put Leanne on the spot for, because she taught me how to start with AI. And one of the best advice that she gave me that I give to other people who are concerned or intimidated by AI was to start with it on like easy things. I don't know, Leanne, if you want to give examples of like ways that you like, because that really helped me with getting my shoe in and not being scared about it and like trying it in more fun and easy ways that didn't rely on my business or do things that way.
She told me to use it for packing lists, recipes. I mean, she had a whole couple of newsletter topics, like the easy things to start with.
The recipe one is the most fun because it's not going to have anything to do with your business. You can put in there, hey, I've got these things in my refrigerator and I want to make a sweet snack. And it will give you some ideas, including the instructions. Now, sometimes the instructions are questionable, but for the most part, it's been pretty good. The packing list obviously is helpful. Hey, I'm going to Hawaii for four days. I'm bringing my entire family. So I have two kids and my husband, and, you know, give me a packing list. Again, what's on the packing list? You know, do I need to bring all those things? Probably not. But, you know, those kinds of things are fun to do. It gets you started, gets you realizing that you can talk to the AI and it will talk back in a way that's a little more friendly than most people think. So I got to ask one question on this friendly thing. How many of you use the word please when you're asking AI to do something?
My husband makes fun of me all the time.
It is. Do you say thank you also?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Guys. I say thank you to Siri too.
Yep.
Okay. So AI is not human. Just saying. You don't have to put those things in there. But as some people have said, if AI takes over, it might be nice for it to remember that you're friendly with it.
Like the Terminator won't just kill all humans on the spot. The one that said please and thank you.
Exactly.
Let's hope. Let's hope. All right. We're going to wrap up this episode. But if you have a technical question, seriously, reach out to any one of us to ask. I know that Leanne has office hours where she can answer any specifics that you have, or by email. heyvapodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Hey, Do I Need a VA? The podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please leave a like, comment, or review. And feel free to join our Facebook group, Find, Hire, and Work with a VA, for more tips and tools. If you have any questions, please email them to heyvapodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.